Please be seated.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today by Judge Allen and Judge Laurer. We're happy to be holding oral argument on site at Penn State Law at University Park, Pennsylvania. And we're here today for the matter of Kevin G. Wallerman versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 20-7299. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Good afternoon, Chief Judge Bartley. Christian McTarnigan for Kevin Wallerman, joined by Jen Zelmer.
Thank you, Mr. McTarnigan and Ms. Zelmer. And Secretary's counsel?
Ronan Morris for the Secretary, and with me is Christopher Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Morris and Mr. Wallace. As you know, each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Mr. McTarnigan, do you want to reserve a portion?
Yes, please. 10 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. We'll make that happen. And you may proceed, Mr. McTarnigan.
Good afternoon, Chief Judge Bartley, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The rule against pyramiding does not preclude a separate rating for Mr. Wallerman's slight instability under Diagnostic Code 5257 because that is a separate and distinct manifestation of his meniscectomy disability that is explicitly contemplated by that diagnostic code. 5 years ago in Lyles, this court held that an evaluation under Diagnostic Code 5257 does not, as a matter of law, preclude a rating under Diagnostic Code 5259, and vice versa. Your Honors, that is the critical language to use to decide this case. This is that case. This is the vice versa case where Mr. Wallerman can be rated under 5259 and rated separately for his slight instability under 5257.
So let me ask you a question. So just so everybody that's here that's not up here is on the same page. So. The Diagnostic Code 5257 deals with the knee, and the Diagnostic Code 5259 also deals with the knee, right? So they're about the same joint.
Yes, Your Honor.
So let me ask you your position on something that I wasn't entirely clear about from the parties, which is assume that a person only had instability of the knee after the surgery, okay? In that circumstance, would it be appropriate, in your view, to award a rating under either 5257 or 5259?
I think it would be most appropriate under 5257, Your Honor, the diagnostic code that explicitly contemplates instability.
And so is it inappropriate to award, or would it be, I guess the technical language would it be arbitrary and capricious to award the rating under 5259 if that was the only symptom that was tied to the knee surgery?
So that's actually a question I thought a lot while thought about a lot while preparing for this. I think if it were the only manifestation of the meniscectomy, a rating under 5259, because it's a 10% rating, I think that would be more a harmless error analysis because you would get the same rating under 5257 and it would be a 10%.
Because I was backing into this point, right, which is it ever appropriate to award a rating under 5259 if the only symptom is instability?
I would say... I'm sorry, I just want to make sure. Is it ever appropriate?
Well, here's what I mean. Assume that for some reason, even though 5259 doesn't identify any particular symptoms, mm-hmm. for some reason, even if instability was a symptom of the surgery, it would be inappropriate to use 5259.
I would agree with that.
Okay, because if that's the case, then in theory, you could never have a pyramiding problem because you would not be able to award a rating under 5259. Only 5257 would be applicable. Is that sort of where you are?
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree with that.
Sorry,
and
Steve
so Dutch. No, I was going to raise the same or similar line of questioning. We do have a case called Copeland.
Right.
And Procurum was a follow-on case where we said that if a condition is specifically listed in the rating schedule, then you don't rate it by analogy to another code. They were talking about the foot conditions in that case. But so in your opinion, that line of cases, even though it was talking about rating by analogy, would be applicable here as a relevant line of cases?
Applicable, but I think distinguishable, Your Honor, because Copeland, excuse me, was dealing with 5284, which would be a catch-all provision.
Yeah, well, isn't 5259 a bit of a catch-all for meniscectomy cases?
I don't think that it is, Your Honor, because unlike the diagnostic codes for the foot condition that all relate to a very specific diagnosis, hallux valgus, hallux rigidus, pes planus, the knee disabilities work a little bit differently. Not only are the codes organized differently, whereas under the diagnostic codes for the foot, they have all of the specific diagnoses and then a catch-all. Under the knee diagnostic codes, 5257 is second, and 5259 just talks generally about symptoms. And the Federal Circuit in Delisle described that 5257 is just for instability. And 5259, if you were to look to the VA General Counsel opinion, 2397, Your Honor, they interpret the general counsel in that decision suggested to interpret a general diagnostic code to include a symptom that's explicitly enumerated in another diagnostic code isn't the appropriate way to determine and to look at what's contemplated by the knee disabilities. I see the cases as distinguished. Also, I don't necessarily see this as a rating by analogy case.
Oh, no, I was clear that it wasn't. I said,
okay.
Although it's not a rating by analogy.
I'm sorry, I misheard you, Your Honor.
Yeah, that there it's a relevant line of cases. Because the principle being that if you have a condition listed in a diagnostic code, your first choice is to rate that condition under the specific diagnostic code and not go to a more general diagnostic code.
I agree with the principle, but in this particular case, Your Honor, I'd say that the instability is more specifically contemplated by 5257.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, absolutely. Uh-huh. I think we're on the same page, Your Honor.
Right, just so I understand this, right, because you would have no objection if the court were to say something like this, which is, you know, 5259 is general and nonspecific, talking about symptomatology. That 5257 is more appropriate to capture instability that might also flow from that surgery, and sort of see, for an example, in an analogous context, Copeland and et cetera, meaning when there's something that's specific, you don't use the general catch-all, you use the specific.
I would love a C-site to Lyle's as well, but I would agree with that.
Right. No, my point is I was just trying to button up a legal point that I could cite to that would support what you said, which is you shouldn't rate instability flowing from the surgery under 5259. And then the answer would be, because it's contemplated specifically by 5257,
right.
Hey, you've done that in other areas that are similar, so that supports the notion.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that. And I would also say that it's consistent with the duty to maximize benefits. So the VA looks at all of the veteran's symptoms, and they give the veteran the highest rating possible under the law, unless, of course, it would be duplicative or overlapping, right? That's the regulatory sort of constraint on the duty to maximize benefits. So in this particular case, the board recognized that the meniscectomy caused grating, popping, locking. That's right there on page 18, record page 18, for their analysis as to why Mr. Wallenman gets the 5259 rating. But then there's this other symptom of lateral instability, and the board seemed to think that pyramiding would preclude that rating. It simply doesn't, Your Honor, because pyramiding is about getting paid for the same symptom twice. Mr. Wallerman can get his 10% with those symptoms of popping, locking, and grating. The board recognized that. But there's another symptom that he can be paid for that he's not currently being compensated for under 5257, and the VA's duty to maximize benefits requires VA to give Mr. Wallerman that rating. Furthermore, Your Honors, when a particular set of diagnostic codes don't allow for an additional or separate rating, as this court recognized in Lyles, there's a specific rule that keeps that from happening, such as the upper respiratory disabilities that this court addressed in Urban. That appears nowhere in the rating criteria for the knee disabilities.
Could I make sure that, so let's assume that we agree with you about 5257 versus 5259. I have a question about remedy. So is it your view that we should, well, let me ask it open-endedly. What should the court's order be if you were going to write it?
We'd like the court to reverse the board's determination that to rate both under 5257 and 5259 would be impermissible pyramiding and remand for the board to apply 5257 to Mr. Wallerman's specific facts given his slight instability.
So I just want to be clear then. You are not asking that the court remand with an order that based on the board's findings thus far, that he is entitled to a 10% rating under 52. He is entitled to a rating under 5257, and the question on remand is whether it's mild, moderate, or severe.
No, we're not asking for reversal and statement of the rating, Your Honor, because we think that there's still some findings that the board needs to look to, because the board saw this impermissible barrier of pyramiding. We think that remand is the appropriate remedy so it can fully adjudicate the case under the correct rule and look to 5257 to see which rating Mr. Wallerman gets.
So, and on that point, is it your view that the board made a factual finding that there was some level of instability? I think it might have used mild to say, but there was instability from the knee. It then said, though, it doesn't matter. We can't award any extra rating under that. That legal proposition is what I'm assuming now for you that we agree with you on. But did the board make a factual determination, in your view, that there is instability?
Yes, Your Honor, they absolutely did. There's a finding that Mr. Wallerman's metastectomy in the findings of fact and conclusion of law section of the board's brief that he has slight instability, which is the exact language used for the 10% rating under 5257.
So then why wouldn't it be appropriate to remand with, again, we got a lot of steps to get to, but assuming we agree with you on each of the steps so far, why wouldn't it then be appropriate to remand with instructions that the board will apply a rating under 5257? Because it seems to me then the only open question would be whether it's slight, moderate, or severe or something.
I certainly appreciate your perspective, Judge Allen. The remedy we thought was best when we were drafting the brief was remand, and that's the remedy you requested in the brief. I certainly see your point, Your Honor.
No, it's going to be remand, assuming that everything goes your way. It would definitely be a remand because there's no question that the board didn't really get into 10, 20, 30. You can look at slight, but given that the board thought I can't award a rating at all, I'm not going to put a lot of stock into that, right? But if the board already found favorably that there is instability, if you're right on the law, then it would seem to follow that a rating of some percentage would follow.
I would agree with you, Judge Allen. I just didn't want to
I understand.
Broaden the scope of the remedy that we requested in the brief because we did feel like remand with the correction about pyramiding and then asking the board to adjudicate under 5257 was more appropriate given the circumstances. But I certainly agree and see your perspective, Judge Allen, about because there's a favorable finding of fact, if you agree with Mr. Wallerman's position on the law, there's not much more for the board to do.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd fight that.
Now, when was the exam that found slight instability?
I believe, if I may, I believe it was the 2013 examination, Your Honor. If you just give me a moment, I can confirm that.
Okay.
The November 2019 examiner found a history of...
Oh, 2019.
Yeah, 2019. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
And was there an examination after that that found no instability?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. I don't see a reference of it, to it in the board decision.
Okay, thank you.
If I may, I just wanted to follow up on Judge Allen's line of questioning and ask you to step into the role of a veterans law judge here if this case were remanded. Can you specify the ratings and the diagnostic codes that you believe would, to use the phrase, maximize benefits based on Mr. Wallerman's left knee disability here?
Certainly, Judge Lauer. So to start, the 10% rating under 5259 would compensate Mr. Wallerman for the swelling, popping, locking, stiffness, grating, and clicking. The board made that finding on page, or R17 of the record, page 17 of the record. Mr. Wallerman has slight instability. We would argue that that would warrant a 10% rating under 5257. Because that's the explicit language contemplated by the 10% rating there. And then in terms of 5260, the answer to your question gets a little bit more complicated because we're of the impression that the examinations that are currently on file in the board's analysis don't get to the heart of Mr. Wallerman's functional loss. So as of right now, Mr. Wallerman has a 10% rating under 5260 under 4.59 for painful, not limited motion. So if... And I'm coming back to Lyles here because I see the case is very similar. If Mr. Wallerman's, if on further analysis, on remand, if there were to be a duty to assist violation found and he were to get a new examination, if any of those symptoms I listed for 5259, and this is what I think is so interesting about the orthopedic diagnostic codes, if they were to limit motion, then he could get a higher rating under 5260. So that's still, I believe, a little bit of an open question, Judge Lauer. Because there's some further development and some further analysis needed. But for the symptoms I listed for 5259, the instability under 5257, and then more than a 10% rating if the functional loss was more than that under 5260. I hope that answers your question, Your Honor.
It does. So that goes to your argument with respect to the adequacy of the two exams and the failure to measure the range of motion, et cetera.
Absolutely, and the functional loss that are caused by these symptoms as opposed to just listing the symptoms themselves and then applying the rating criteria exactly.
Thank you.
And you'd agree, just as a matter of sort of tying the bow up here, that if we on the 5260 point, which is for everybody, it's another diagnostic code for the knee, right? The knee is a complex joint. So you also make a reasons or bases argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
You'd agree that if we agreed with you that the exams are inadequate, we wouldn't have to address your reasons or bases point because the reasons or bases could be very different the next time we got a decision.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I can reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I'm good. No further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McConaughey.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Mr. Morris, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Your Honors, Regulatory Section 4.14 prohibits rating a single disability under multiple diagnostic codes. It does not preclude separate ratings under diagnostic codes 5259 and 5257 if the veteran has the distinct disabilities contemplated by both of those codes. If, as here, the veteran experiences instability as a residual of a meniscectomy, the veteran does not have two disabilities, but a single disability appropriately rated under diagnostic code 5259. Your Honors, there are three points that I'd like to make that support this. First, Your Honors, is diagnostic codes 5259 and 5257 contemplate or address distinct disabilities that involve distinct components of the knee. Second, the appellant in this case does not have the disability contemplated by Diagnostic Code 5257, and outside of what the board found to be his limitation of motion, he has a single disability which is not subject to multiple evaluations. Third, Your Honors, if this court were to find that the appellant's instability was separately rateable under Diagnostic Code 5257, this would not only be a violation of Regulatory Section 4.14, but it would effectively be a violation of the separation of powers and the express limitation on the court's authority under Statutory Section 7252, because it would ultimately amount to a revision of VA's rating schedule and an overruling of the Secretary's authority to decide what compensation is paid for what disabilities.
Now, Mr. Morris, before you go further, the appellant filed a supplemental authority notice regarding a VA manual provision, and it did seem as though that provision was supportive of his position here, particularly example number 5 in the manual. So can you just talk to that, because you haven't had a chance to respond?
Your Honors, yes, and I believe that some of this will also, you know, be addressed in other contexts. But to respond directly to that manual provision, as it states in the provision, was based specifically on Lyles and on this court's decision in Lyles, and doesn't necessarily reflect what the agency's views of the regulations are themselves or how they interplay. But I don't believe that anything in that provision or any of the examples undermine the Secretary's position. In fact, I believe that they fully support the Secretary's positions. And if I may, to provide that context and further explanation, I'd like to start actually, you know, at the knee itself, Your Honor. The knee is one of the largest and most complex joints in the human body, and it comprised of bones, tendons, ligaments, bursae, and two crescent-shaped pieces of cartilage, the menisci. Cartilage, which is what the menisci are the tissue that that in between bones. They prevent bones from rubbing against each other. They're shock absorbers. In contrast, ligaments, Your Honor, are the tissue that connect bone to bone, and they provide joint stability. And so, Your Honors, when we look at Diagnostic Codes 5259 and 5257, they inherently contemplate different components of the knee. 5258 and 59, the two are meniscal conditions. They're cartilage conditions. One is the dislocation of, and the other one is the removal of that semilunar cartilage, the meniscus. Diagnostic Code 5257, Your Honors, contemplates other impairments of the knee, which the Federal Circuit recognized in DeLisle are those conditions not otherwise enumerated elsewhere in the rating schedule, and specifically lateral instability, Your Honor, which both historically and now under the current version of the regulation is recognized as caused by injury to the ligaments that result in the knee moving too much side to side. It also contemplates recurrent subluxation, which is a condition where the patella, the kneecap bone, essentially partially dislocates and slides out of the femoral groove. And now, under the amended version of 5257, also contemplates patellar instability, which is very similar to subluxation, but involves essentially the full dislocation of the kneecap bone.
Could I make sure I'm following you? Because I think I am, but I want to make sure. So what you're doing is you're saying, for our purposes here, 5259 deals with essentially things flowing from the removal of this cartilage, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And that could include instability. And if there was instability that flowed from the removal of, in our case, the removal of the cartilage, then that would be qualify sufficiently to be symptomatic for the 10% rating.
That's
right?
Correct.
Am I right so far?
Correct.
Then you're saying, now, instability as a symptom is also covered somewhere else, 5257, but that's dealing with a different component of the knee, if you will, instability caused by something that isn't specifically dealt with somewhere else, i.e. 5259, when the instability flows from cartilage. Is that?
Essentially, yes, Your Honor, that these involve different components, and the distinction is instability that might result from the removal of the cartilage, the meniscus, is a symptom of that. It's a manifestation of that disability. In contrast, or compared to what is contemplated by lateral instability. And I'd note that, Your Honors, the Diagnostic Code specifically speaks to lateral instability, meaning that this is more than merely just a symptom of a different disability. It is its own disability. And it's been recognized and understood and was promulgated as a disability that results from an injury to the ligament. And to the extent that this, Your Honor, that I believe that this is apparent on the face of just the nature, the inherent nature of these disabilities, but it's also reflected in the Federal Register. And in the amendment to 5257, the Secretary specifically stated in the Federal Register that the amendment to 5257 had no impact on Diagnostic Codes 5258 or 59 because they involve different components of the knee. And you'll note that the
how do we know the instability is there medical evidence here that the so you'd agree with me the board found that there is slight instability.
I believe that the board made a very favorable and generous finding in that regard, and it did, and it based that off of because I know that this question was asked earlier. So there the 2019 medical examination noted the past history of that instability. The examination itself found no instability.
So the point I wanted to ask was, just assume with me for a moment that the board's, we can call it generous, I have no idea, right? But we'll just call it some sort of finding. It said something about instability. Did it make a finding about what that instability was tied to?
Yes, Your Honor, it did. In fact, in the board's ultimate findings of fact, I believe on page 6 of the record or page 3 of the board decision, it specifically tied that instability into the residual, into the removal of the meniscus. So it did very much so, and it made that very specific finding of fact. And that finding of fact here is dispositive of the outcome of this particular case.
Mr. Can you clarify the old version, which is what we're working under, of 5257, did that include the word lateral?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. I believe it did.
Okay.
And I would note, though, further that while the, you know, while there was a change to 5257, what was changed are the, you know, the rating criteria, not the nature of the disability itself. The disability has always been the same, that lateral instability, and that has always been the same disability. What was changed was going from the purely subjective, slight, mild, or moderate, and severe, to an objective criteria as to how to rate that instability. And so, Your Honors, when we look at the board's decision here and we recognize that these are two different diagnostic codes, the board made that finding attributing the veteran's instability to the residuals of his meniscectomy. And the board characterized that disability as the residuals of a meniscectomy. And there is a diagnostic code directly on point, which is 5259, the symptomatic residuals of the removal of semilunar cartilage. And that.
So it strikes me that you and your friend on the other side are sort of making the same argument, but from different points, right? In other words, your argument, and both of them are facially plausible to me, I will tell you, right? Your argument is, well, no, we need to look at the body part within the knee, and 5259 talks about the cartilage, 5257 talks about other, right? And so because 5259 is taken out cartilage as a cause for instability, you can't use 5257. Seems like Mr. Tarnian is approaching it exactly the opposite, right? Am I getting this right?
I think we agree about 90% of all the points in this case.
It's true because it makes a difference. It reminds me of I was never good in math, but I was okay on this point of math, which is there was the thing about the order of operations. Which thing do you do first, right? Because if the order of operations is we first have to use the body part, then that fits with your narrative. If the idea is, no, the key is symptom, then perhaps we look the other way.
And I'd suggest, Your Honor, that the starting point is never symptom when we're talking about ratings. What we're rating, we are rating disability. And an appropriate rating is not based on whether a veteran is receiving a separate dollar amount for every symptom. Right? That symptom may be informative as to what the disability is, but we are rating the disability. And where we go to determine what that disability is to the board. The board makes that characterization. The board makes that finding as to what constitutes, you know, what that disability is. And in this case, the board described, found two disabilities. It found the limitation of motion, and it found the residuals of a meniscectomy. And that residuals of the meniscectomy, the board found, manifested with symptoms that included instability as a part of that disability. So, Your Honors, I don't believe that it's so much of a question as, you know, where do we start? Because I think the case law is very clear that what that rating schedule is there to do is to rate disability. And 4.14, while it does speak to the question of, you know, compensating multiple times for the same symptoms, its first sentence is you don't compensate a single disability under multiple diagnostic codes. And I believe that's the dispositive sentence here, Your Honor, or the dispositive part of 4.14, which is a single disability cannot be rated under multiple diagnostic codes. And by parsing out a disability into independent symptoms and viewing every symptom as a disability, that would undermine the entire purpose of the rating code.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying, the way you're interpreting the rating schedule sounds contrary to our Esteban case, which said different manifestations of the same disability, as long as they're different manifestations, can be rated under different diagnostic codes.
I believe that when Esteban is read in the context of both itself and subsequent cases, what Esteban is referring to, that manifestation is manifestations of disability, a single injury that causes multiple disabilities. And if that is the case, if a single injury causes multiple disabilities, then those disabilities can be separately rated, subject to the other provision of 4.14, which is that if they have the same, you know, if they have those same symptoms, if they have that same impairment, you still can't compensate for that twice. The goal of the rating schedule is to compensate a veteran for their disability and that compensation based on the average impairment in earning capacity. And the Secretary developed that diagnostic code, which reflects many different types of disabilities. And the Secretary has decided, based on those disabilities, this is the compensation that's out. This is how that disability, that functional impairment, translates, on average, into lost economic opportunity. And by suggesting instead that we don't look to the disability, but we're looking to the individual symptoms, every symptom, what this court would effectively be doing would be changing the rating schedule. The court would be overruling the Secretary's judgment as to the average impairment in earning capacity caused by a disability, and expanding that so that the average impairment in earning capacity is now associated not with a disability, but with every conceivable manifestation of that disability, every symptom of that disability. And that's simply not what the rating schedule was intended, how it was intended to be used.
So it did kind of worry me back when you first started your argument that you were referencing the Federal Register publication of the new version of 5257, because, like, well, under the old one, we don't have all those explanations that the new one gave.
And that's correct. And I'm not suggesting that this is, you know, a primary source of authority. I think the diagnostic codes themselves reflect that, because Your Honors, one would have to assume that diagnostic codes are, that 5257 is merely rating a symptom, but it's not. It's rating a disability. The purpose of the Secretary's of pointing out the Federal Register is because it indicates that no change was made to the disability that is actually being rated, and it does provide that context and explanation. But Your Honor is correct that Diagnostic Code 5257, you know, historically mentioned lateral instability. But I don't know, but Your Honor, I'm not sure what further explanation would have been needed to be provided, because lateral instability is, I mean, even when it's Googled, you know, it means something very particular. And it relates to, specifically to side-to-side movement, and ligaments are the things that control that. And there are four.
So why did the board approach this, do you think, the way it did? So number one, it does have that curious, my characterization, curious that it's got a list of symptoms that it associated, and it didn't include in the list instability. So was it saying that was because it would seem to me what the board should have done if it were following the Secretary's view of the diagnosis code now is it should have said, here are the symptoms, and it should have included in the locking, blah, 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 slight instability, and then should have said the veteran's argument that he is entitled to a 10% rating under 5257 is barred because that does not include symptoms of the cartilage. You see what I mean?
I do. And, Your Honors, I certainly think that the board decision could have been written better and clearer. I think much of it inured to the benefit of appellant in this particular case. But again, it could have been clearer. I do think, though, that what the board was likely faced with was its attempt to interpret this court's decision in Lyles. Because as the appellant has argued, one can have a different, it is not entirely clear, Your Honor, the extent to which Lyles, what it requires. And I believe that it's fully consistent with the Secretary's position here, because I believe that what Lyles said was simply correct, is that a rate, if you have a knee disability and you're rated under 5257, your meniscal disability can be separately rated. It's not precluded as a matter of law from being rated under both. And that is precisely the Secretary's position here, that you absolutely can if you have both disabilities. But, Your Honors, I would submit that the board's analysis suggested that it was struggling perhaps to understand the implications of Lyles in this case. But nevertheless, its outcome was correct and probably could have reached that outcome in a shorter fashion. But I don't believe that the board's, to the extent that the board both inured, erred in the favor of the veteran perhaps, or perhaps generously made some findings. What's undisputed in this case is that, here the board made that finding that the instability was a part of the residuals of the veteran's meniscectomy. And the appellant's position here is exclusively that the instability is a part of the residuals of his meniscectomy.
So, this may be unfair because you're not a doctor, and neither am I. But if you, maybe you are a doctor, but if you, is it possible to have lateral instability that is the result of the removal of the semilunar cartilage?
It seems highly improbable, but I am not a doctor. It seems very improbable. However, there is perhaps a distinction between that lateral instability that is actually demonstrated by an examination, which, the DVQs do very much test for the four different types of instability, versus a report of a feeling or an experience of that instability. And those are two very different things, because one cannot report that actual disability, but one can report the symptoms. And so, Your Honor, it would appear that that was actually this case, because there is not a single piece of evidence, of medical evidence, in this record that demonstrates the lateral instability. What there is merely a notation of past history, which we don't even know occurred during this claim stream.
So what would happen hypothetically, just one final question, what would happen hypothetically if it were medically possible to have lateral instability that resulted from the removal of the cartilage? Would it, at that point, would appellant's argument in the Secretary's view have more merit? Because then, perhaps if there were other symptoms that were related to the removal of the cartilage, then the duty to maximize benefits would kick in.
No, Your Honor, because we would still have one disability. Now, I would submit, though, that in that case, when we're discussing what that disability is, at this level, we're not looking at the record. We are looking to the board's determination. So we still have that board's determination of this is the disability. If it were possible for lateral instability to result from the removal of the meniscus, what we would still have is that disability is characterized by the board, which in this case is still the symptomatic residuals of the removal of that semilunar cartilage. And again, 4.14 specifically prohibits rating a single disability under multiple diagnostic codes. And under this court's case law, we don't look to analogous diagnostic codes if we have one on point. Now, in that scenario, that Your Honor had asked, if the veteran's sole symptom, let's say it's lateral instability and that was the result of a meniscectomy.
Not sole symptom. What I'm trying to explore here is, on your view, right? Because this is a facially plausible articulation here for me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So is that assume that you had this, you had exactly what the board did here, okay, except what it said is the veteran has popping, licking, locking, clicking, grading, right, that whole list. And then the board said, and lateral instability that flowed from the cartilage, right? My question would be, would the secretary at that point, on that limited ground, right, say, well, since there are other symptoms that clearly related to the removal of the cartilage and lateral instability based on medical, I know that that's not the situation here as clearly, right, but and was lateral instability, why would moving that symptom to 5257, which also deals with 50 lateral instability, why would that not be supported by the notion of maximization of benefits?
Well, the duty to maximize benefits is not an independent duty. It's simply a composite expression of the duties that otherwise exist within the rating schedule. And it's bounded by the rating schedule. One of those, you know, one of those boundaries is 4.14, which prohibits rating a single disability under multiple diagnostic codes. So in your example, Your Honor, it's a little bit difficult to answer if the question is based on the record versus the board's findings, because what we would need is the board's findings. Did the veteran have residuals of a meniscectomy? Was that lateral instability a residual of that meniscectomy? If the board made that finding, and that's plausibly supported by the record, then that is the answer to the question. Then the veteran has that disability, and that's if that's how the board characterizes it, and the board chooses diagnostic code 5259 to rate it, certainly not arbitrary and capricious, and there is nothing unreasonable about its underlying findings of fact. If the board were to find that a veteran experiences instability, the veteran had residuals of a meniscectomy that included group X, and then had lateral instability, which was not a residual of that meniscectomy, then the veteran would be entitled to potentially two separate ratings, because in that case the board made that requisite finding that there are two disabilities. Now, much of this, how this plays out in practice, is going to be dependent on the record and whatever what is and is not medically plausible. And I would submit again that I'm not sure that it's medically plausible that the removal of cartilage would create the type of disability contemplated by diagnostic code 5257, like ever, or rather that it would ever cause that, you know, more than a sensation of, you know, of instability. It certainly would not, the removal of cartilage would not affect the ligaments in the knee. If it did, if the removal did, then there would be a separate injury. If there's a separate injury, then again, we would be able to get back to a separate, you know, potentially a separate rating.
But so for you, it's the absence of the word lateral that changes the entire situation here?
No, it's the with respect, Your Honor, it's the absence of the disability.
Well, but if the word lateral were in there, you seem to be essentially conceding that he would deserve a separate rating under 5257.
Apologies if I misspoke, Your Honor. It is not the word lateral at all. It is the board's finding on the record as to whether this is or was not a part of the veteran's, you know, meniscectomy, the result of his meniscectomy. It's the board's obligation to characterize the disability, to review that record, and to make those findings as to what is the veteran's disability, to characterize it, and then to take that characterization and then look to the diagnostic code and find the appropriate diagnostic code. And that first finding is reviewed under the clear error standard, and that second is reviewed under the arbitrary and capricious, not in accordance with the law, abuse of discretion standard. What we have here is a finding by the board that this is instability, which again, under the record, is simply a notation with no date whatsoever. It easily could have pre-existed, and it's not supported by any medical evidence. So I would suggest, yes, that was a very generous, favorable finding that the board found. But the board found that it was a result of the veteran's meniscectomy, the removal of his semilunar cartilage.
But what do we do with the fact that we're bound jurisdictionally? We don't have the jurisdiction to consider the favorable finding of slight instability, right? Even if it's based on nothing more than the board's fanciful determination, right? I mean, we simply can't look at that, right? Right?
If the court
qualifies that as a favorable finding, then yes. However, I would suggest, Your Honor, whether it's favorable, it may stem from what the court's disposition is in this case.
If
relating its existence is certainly favorable.
No, that's what I mean. Yes. I'm going to you're actually seeing where I'm going. So hold on. So there's no world in which a finding of slight instability could be anything more than favorable. It might not be as favorable as it could be because it could be moderate, for example. But finding the mere finding of instability as a factual matter sort of has to be favorable. I can't envision a situation where you'd be better off if you didn't in terms of having ratings, right?
I would tend to agree.
Right. Okay. So I'm trying to work through this. So then we're bound by the finding of slight instability in the sense that we can't even assess that for clear error. It's just, it is what it is. Then what do we do going back to the actual board decision that when it actually lists the symptoms that it sees flowing, it doesn't list instability, but you pointed to the finding of fact where it finds the only disability is flowing from the cartilage, right? Is there still a problem, even if we adopt your view about this?
No, Your Honor. There are two areas where the board makes the connection. The first is in the ultimate finding of the fact, at the very beginning of the board's decision, where right after it states its order, that it does its findings of fact, and in that, I think it's the second one down, or the third one down. It makes that specific finding that it includes the instability. Elsewhere in the decision, I believe it's contextual, but it's still very clear that the board's considering this as a residual of the meniscectomy. So,
I'm with you. I have it. So basically, what you're saying is when it made its official finding of fact, for my word, it included the slight instability in the list. When it later didn't, it was in the context of basically dealing with the 52-57 argument, and so read in context, you're saying that's why it was doing it then.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would suggest though that I understand the concern if the veteran has instability, he has a symptom, and that the veteran is not necessarily receiving independent compensation for that instability because he potentially otherwise could be rated under 5259 and still get that same 10%. But I would just like to point out two things with respect to that. One is that these ratings are ratings, again, are based on disability, but they're based on the average impairment and earning capacity, and their ranges. Their ranges, and this particular diagnostic code contemplates that entire range of symptomatic residuals. And presumably that's based on medical and scientific fact and understandings of how the anatomy works and how the human body works and those possible symptoms. But it really doesn't matter because the Secretary created a diagnostic code that rates all the symptomatic residuals of a meniscectomy, and it provides for a 10% rating. And challenging that, Your Honor, is effectively saying that the Secretary was wrong or that this diagnostic code is unfair. And that, Your Honor, is beyond the scope of this court's jurisdiction under 7252 because it would effectively amount to creating a different system or just determining that a veteran should be given more money because the Secretary's diagnostic code doesn't give a net. And I believe that the court even recognized.
So, but you're not actually making you're not to put words into your mouth. You're not actually making you do not have subject matter jurisdiction argument. You're saying if you were to interpret the diagnostic codes the way appellant suggests, it would run afoul of the general principle that you, court, should not get your nose into the diagnostic
Correct, right, Your Honor. Right, okay. If this court were to find that a separate rating in this case under these facts was permissible, the court would be saying that 10% that the Secretary decided you were owed is not enough. That diagnostic code is not fair for you, that you deserve more money, and that, Your Honor, would exceed the scope of the court's jurisdiction. I realize that my time now is winding down to the final 10 seconds.
Let's add 5 minutes, please. So,
Go on, Jeff.
Okay, Mr. Morris, you were talking about how a veteran's complaint of instability. A veteran cannot actually complain of lateral instability. Didn't you make that statement that a veteran is not capable of saying, I have lateral instability?
Veteran is not competent to identify their disability under Diagnostic Code 5257. A veteran...
He can... English said, right?
Yeah,
that,
I, that's what I was going to say. We had a case that
there
talked
are two
about
cases, so, there are two cases that direct, you know,
yeah,
that, that
so
would,
can you talk about, because yes. What you're saying, I forgot the name of the case, but it sounded
English
exactly opposite of.
Yeah, both of them I'm familiar with.
Okay, yeah.
So,
it's not
so
sinking to me.
yes, Your Honor, I don't believe that this position is entirely, you know, that this is inconsistent with it. I mean, it's not the facts here. Like, we don't have that. But to illustrate it, you know, English found that, you know, the board couldn't categorically reject lay statements of instability and, you know, just categorically
and
reject them.
And to be
them.
Clear, were they talking about DC 5257? I thought
Tedesco certainly was, and I believe that
English definitely.
Yes. Uh-huh. So the court there was speaking to the type of evidence necessary, but the court was not engaged in what the disability was under that diagnostic code or what is ultimately needed to establish, you know, to establish that rating. It was in English was you can't categorically reject it, and in Tedesco it was the board couldn't rely on the medical examinations over the veteran's lay statements because of English. I would submit that first, I those are law. I do believe that they should, you know, that they are questionable insofar as. If it is read to assume medical facts, to impose, you know, judicially imposed medical facts, then, Your Honor, then perhaps they should be revisited, because this court's own case law directs that the scope of a veteran's competence and what they can identify. Perhaps a veteran can.
Mr. Morse, I think just to throw this out there, right? I think that both Tedesco and particularly English, certainly English, although I think this only now is going to apply to the older diagnostic code, because I think the new diagnostic code, at least we haven't said anything about it, but pretty much clearly didn't want to do that. But those were, I think, best read to say a veteran is capable of a lay statement that I feel unstable, I have instability, and perhaps even from side to side, that might not be the same thing as being able to say I have, quote, lateral instability to the extent that is a specific medical finding. Is that sort of what you said?
Yes.
Because
yes.
neither Tedesco and English got to that level of detail.
Correct. I don't think that those cases in any way have to be read as inconsistent with what I'm suggesting here. In fact, I think they are both inherently consistent. But to the extent that they are read further to mean that a veteran can identify that very ligament disability that is lateral instability contemplated under 5257, then I believe that that would be inconsistent with this court's own case law regarding competence. But instability, because instability, Your Honor, I mean, it can relate. We see in this case, it could potentially, you know, that feeling can result from a cartilage issue. That feeling can result from muscle injuries or muscle weakness. There are many things that instability and that feeling of
instability. So if the board then was able to categorize the instability here as being related to the cartilage, since the board is equally as incapable as a layperson for making a medical judgment, then is there a problem that the board, without medical evidence, associated it with the meniscopy? No. Are you seeing what I mean?
Yes, I believe that the board's finding here was plausible, given two very specific things. The 2013 examination, which tested for all four types of instability, including lateral instability, and the 2019 examination, which tested again for all four types of disability, including lateral instability, were both negative for actual lateral instability. And there is no medical evidence whatsoever indicating any test for these. These are specific tests. So the board's finding that reported history of this past history of instability, I believe the board could plausibly relate it to not.
Let's add 5 more minutes, please.
To not lateral instability as this ligament issue, which has never been identified.
So what do we do, though? This is sort of a counterfactual, not counterfactual, but it's almost like a thought exercise. So your point, if you were just sitting down chatting with somebody at a bus stop about the case for some reason, would say you'd waiting for a long time at the bus if you got to this probably, but is well, you know, listen, this finding of slight instability, it's just pulled out of thin air. It's not based on anything. That would be fair, I think, right? But you realize you're sort of stuck with it because the board made it and we can't review it, and that's the system Congress set up. Great. But then when I say, Well, what's the medical evidence by which the board associated the finding that, in your view, should never exist? The only thing we have are the evidence that you rely on, perhaps correctly, to say that the board was wrong to find that there was instability. You see the problem that this is?
Your Honor, I absolutely do. And,
right.
And were I reviewing the record and I would have found that undated, no time frame reference to instability, I would have rejected it as irrelevant. That's what I would have done. The board didn't do that. The board made a finding that this existed, and it associated it with the veteran's meniscectomy. I would submit, though, that at least under that clear error review standard, that plausible basis standard, it is certainly plausible to attribute it to the residuals of the meniscectomy, given that there is zero indication anywhere in the record of a ligament injury, and that both book corners examinations found no instability on the specific tests that are designed to test for the anterior, posterior, lateral, and medial instability. So I do think that it is certainly a plausible finding. But I would also note, Your Honors, that as far as that fact goes, that is also the appellant's argument that it is a part of the residuals of the meniscectomy. But I do think that the board's finding was certainly plausible, not one that I necessarily would have made. But that's many board decisions, I suppose.
You're preaching to the choir, Mr. Morris. So.
I have a question. Yeah. So we spent a fair amount of time talking about the changes to the diagnostic codes, the extensive changes here. So my question to you, Mr. Morris, would be, given those extensive changes, should this court consider deeming the changes in the diagnostic codes to be new legal development under the Davis case and remand it to the board to consider the updates to the DCs? Would you see that as a helpful?
No, Your Honor, because of the board's dispositive finding that the veteran's instability was a residual of the meniscectomy. That is dispositive in this case, that the board's selection of 5259 was appropriate, and that a separate rating for that same disability was not warranted. And so in this case, I believe, you know, the board's findings alone here are dispositive. And I think ultimately, Your Honors, at the end of the day, the issue here seems to be, again, with a grievance as to the amount of money that's being paid to the veteran. But it's not for this court or the appellant or anyone else to decide what amount of compensation is due to a disability. The secretary has decided that the symptomatic residuals of a meniscectomy warrant a 10% rating. And whether that's fair or not is simply not the question before us. That is what the secretary has determined, and that determination is made based on, you know, the secretary's judgment.
But, I mean, limitation of motion, limitation of, extension and flexion are also, you know, aspects of the meniscectomy here, and they have separate diagnostic codes. So your whole framework here, I'm not sure it really makes sense.
Well, Your Honor, as I said at the beginning, Your Honor, I believe that this was a very generous board decision. Flawed, perhaps, but also a very generous one.
Well, you wouldn't actually argue that the rating here for, was it for flexion?
I believe it was, I don't remember. I apologize.
I can't remember. Well, anyway, it was for either flexion or extension. I thought it was flexion. That would have fallen under, I mean, you couldn't argue that.
The flexion, no, but the veteran didn't have a compensable rating for limitation of motion outside of the DeLuca factors. What the board considered as the dispositive factor there in assigning that compensable rating was pain, which by the board's own discussion probably should not have related to that, but it's actually due to the lack of cartilage in between the veteran's knee, which would have been a residual of the meniscectomy. So, Your Honors, yes, I do recognize that there are flaws. I don't believe that it's fair to assess the legitimacy of how the rating schedule is applied based on what was perhaps a generous error by the board, which was perhaps under the, you know, duty to maximize benefits. The board was doing everything that it thought that it should do. I apologize. I see that my time is now.
Right. Okay.
Judge Walter, no questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. McTarnigan.
Thank you, Chief Judge Barley, Your Honors. This case is interesting because the secretary and appellant agree, I think, that the board's finding that the metastectomy resulted in lateral instability is dispositive. But we see the view of the law and how that dispositive factual finding works in very different ways. Just very briefly, there was a lot of talk about the favorable facts, factual finding about the instability and whether it was generous or not. The board made that favorable factual finding. That's an unreviewable factual finding. And not only is it supported by English and Tedesco, that's what the board did. And because the board made that favorable factual findings, then we come back to basic principles of VA law that pervade and are the foundation on which this practice of law and the regulations are based. It's the duty to maximize benefits. Mr. Wallerman does not need two distinct injuries or two distinct disabilities in order to get this separate rating under 5257. 4.562 and Esteban and Lyles, they all acknowledge this bedrock concept that it can be two disabilities that the VA rate separately, but it also can be different and distinct separate manifestations of a singular disability. And that's what we have here. Where VA starts to rate a veteran is important, but where VA ends is more important. VA started with the 5259 aspect of this case. They looked at what caused that. Then they moved to 5260, which was inappropriate under the facts of this case because of the painful non-limited motion. But then it stopped. It saw pyramiding as a barrier to going further and giving Mr. Wallerman a separate rating under 5257. The secretary keeps invoking section 4.14, and that's an important rule, but it doesn't apply here because for it to apply, Mr. Wallerman would have to get paid twice, rated twice for the same manifestations of his singular disability, and that's simply not the case. Here, the board gave Mr. Wallerman his rating under 5259 for manifestations of his disability that had nothing to do with lateral instability.
Mr. Carney, can I ask you one question? Which is, it seems to me that a part of what Mr. Morris argued was basically that, my way of looking at it now, is that DC 5257 simply doesn't deal with instability that is the result of the knee surgery, the meniscus, right? Is there any support for that, given that the code, the DC as we're talking about now, talks a bit, says knee, comma, other impairment of?
Right.
So I'm just wondering, what do I do with the word other? What is it comparing it to? Because contrasting it or using also the Chief Judge's point, I'm sort of confused by this, right? Because if the limitation of flexion actually also does flow from the cartilage, it would be the removal of the cartilage. It would seem weird to allow that, but not the instability.
Right.
Except that there is a difference in 5257 with that word other, and so I just wondered if you could help me with that.
Right. Well, I think Delisle is informative on this issue, Your Honor. In Delisle, the veteran admitted that he didn't have any sort of lateral instability, yet he wanted a moderate rating under 5257 because he believed, even though he didn't have lateral instability, he had a moderate knee condition. And he pointed to that other than language, but the Federal Circuit said that that's not how the plain language of 5257 should be interpreted. Rather, it's impairment other than those explicitly enumerated in the diagnostic codes that result in subluxation and lateral instability. So Mr. Wallerman.
That's what I thought Mr. Morris was basically saying, which is
right.
That if, in fact, the instability, whether or not lateral instability could be caused by this or not, but I'm just going to use instability,
sure,
flowed from the removal of the cartilage, it can't be compensated under 5257 because that's not what 5257 is about. And it just struck me as I'm looking at it whether the language other impairment not being saying it's a catch-all for just a knee thing,
right,
but meaning the impairment, because it says other impairment of colon. I think it's either a colon or a semicolon. The print is simply too small for my
I believe
eyes.
It's a colon. I copied this from the reg book, so it might be a bit of a
smudge. It's a colon. All right. I think that makes almost no difference, and if it does, I'm not going to explain what the difference between the colon and the semicolon is.
Appreciate it.
But it says other impairment of colon, recurrent subluxation, or lateral instability.
Right.
And so one way one could sort of read this is to say, hey, if it's not covered somewhere else, and yeah, you've got an other impairment, i.e. lateral instability, you can get the rating here.
Right.
But if it is covered somewhere else, you can't. And so I just wanted to get your reaction to that possibility.
Sure. Well, I don't think that lateral instability is covered anywhere else other than in Diagnostic Code 5257. And I refer back to the general counsel opinion again, Your Honor, I just want to get the citation right for the record, 2397, where the general counsel explicitly commented on the interplay between, I believe it was 5002, 5003, and 5257, and the general counsel advised that inclusion of such symptomatology in a diagnostic code, lateral instability, tends to negate any implication that, although unspecified, it's also for consideration in another diagnostic code, which would be 5259. So that's how I look at the language and I look at the interplay, Your Honor. Because when you look back to how Mr. Wallerman can get separate ratings in this case, he can get, in response more directly to the court's order for clarification, he can get that rating under 5259 without lateral instability. So the Secretary's invocation of the jurisdictional statute, I would think, derails the separate ratings analysis that has been a part of this court's case law since Esteban and was blessed in knee orthopedic cases in Lyles. And it's also completely inconsistent with the M21. In fact, the Secretary had to change the guidance in the M21 from what I consider the argument that's being made today, that you can't get a separate rating because they both, 5258 and 5259 and 5257 on the other hand, all three, I suppose, they all contemplate lateral instability. So VA adjudicators...
Did the board find lateral instability or just say instability?
It said slight instability.
So what do we do with that? You're not a doctor either, as far as I know, and I still am not.
I'm not, Your Honor.
Okay. I didn't think so. We've seen each other enough. But if the board only talked about instability...
Right.
I'm assuming there's more than one type of instability?
I would imagine so, Your Honor, but if I can just be a little bit more precise about the language, I apologize, because now I have the current version of the M21 in front of me. It says, and recurrent subluxation and instability. So I think the language is sort of imprecise. It's framed in different ways in the diagnostic code and the way that it's talked about in the M21 pre and post. But at the end of the day, I think relying back and looking back to English, I don't think that there's a specific requirement that the evidence be specifically lateral instability. If I'm remembering English, and I must admit I should have, but I did not reread English before this argument, is that the veteran's lay statements about giving way and falling could be enough to raise the issue.
This doesn't mean anything other than one judge's perspective. I mean, I wrote, as you know, I wrote English, so I'll tell you what I was thinking, but which is that nothing else mattered other than that it was a threshold point that the VA just said, well, you can't tell me you have instability, right? And we said, well, sure you can, right? You can say that it feels unstable. So, you know, in that sense, English was a small little whimper, maybe, but an important whimper.
Agreed.
But here, the regulation, the DC, the diagnostic code, actually says lateral, right? And it just struck me for the first time, and this is my problem, not yours, that we're arguing about getting a rating under 5257 and 5259, when the board finds instability, says instability several times, but never characterizes the instability as lateral. So in your view, if there is such a thing as unlateral instability, can that be compensated under 5257?
Yes, I think it can, because the symptom of recurrent subluxation...
Please add 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Judge Marley. I think that... unlateral instability. I'm just
it's just lateral instability. The word lateral has to do something, right? Because it modifies instability. I will confess to you, I'm not sure what it does, because I'm not sure if there is such a thing as non-lateral or unlateral instability.
Right.
But my point being, we have an odd thing here. We got a board decision that clearly associates instability with the removal of the cartilage and makes the finding that there is instability, right?
Right.
But then we're talking about a diagnostic code that may or may not allow an additional level of compensation that uses instability that is modified by the word lateral. And I'm just trying to figure out, what does the word lateral mean? Is it important for us to think about that?
Well, I think this actually goes right back to the beginning of the argument, Judge Allen, and why we think remand will be the appropriate remedy, because there are these holes in the board's decision because of the fact that they thought that 5257 was precluded as a matter of law. In this case, I understand it's a case-specific finding, because there was an overlap between 5257 and 5259. And so remanding for the board to look into that, I think, is an important part of this case.
So I just want to go back to the question that Judge Allen asked you, and note that in the manual provision that we received in your supplemental authority, instability, not lateral instability, but instability is defined. And this manual provision actually says instability, as referred to in 5257, includes patellar instability due to recurrent patellar subluxation or patellar dislocation, and or any other instability or laxity of the knee that involves other stabilizing structure of the knee, such as collateral or cruciate ligaments. So it doesn't mention lateral there, and also seems to include instability in a broad sense, is my reading.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor, and I apologize I didn't point the court to that more quickly, but that is absolutely right. That's section 1B4B.
And you'd agree that at a minimum, perhaps, an error in the board decision as well, because I agree with both of you that we'll say it charitably, the board decision could have been better.
Right.
I think everybody agrees with that. But part of the way in which it could have been better is it didn't discuss the M21 at all.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right, so we then get into the point that the diagnostic code says lateral, the M21 doesn't. If the board's going to apply lateral or not apply lateral, it might have to tell us why or why it isn't doing it. Right,
that
is
another
problem. Overton,
right.
Ely.
Yes,
right. Okay.
I would agree. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McTarnon. Thank you all very much for your arguments. The court would, before we adjourn, like to thank Penn State Law for hosting the oral argument, and also thank the interim dean, Dean Hauck, and also Professor Vollmer, who's the associate dean of clinics and the director of the Veterans and Service Members Legal Clinic. The case is submitted for consideration, and the court is adjourned.